The following is brought to you by the Starfleet Podcast Network, SPN, The Spin.
I think just because it's good doesn't mean you need to keep doing it.
It's absolutely right, because then you start to make mediocre, you know, episodes and shows, and then it takes away from the magic of the original one, you know? So I say, I think sometimes it's good to have an end to something, not just keep it going and keep it going and keep it going, you know, like the Energizer Bunny. It's like... Sometimes it's good to just say, put a period at the end of the story and say, the end.
A red alert.
I got your name from David Dodd, whom I believe you've, have worked with, and he suggested I reach out to you.
Yeah.
Good. So I said, I'm definitely, certainly always up for finding new people involved in Star Trek to talk to and get to know for my podcast, which is Beyond Trek Podcast. And so I go by Big J on the podcast. And Daniel, you like Dan or Daniel?
Dan's fine.
Dan's fine. Okay. Dan Madsen. Yeah,
Daniel is my actual name, but Dan's the name I go by.
Okay. Excellent. Well, I was reading up on you on Facebook and so forth, and you're the founder for a Star Wars fan group and Star Trek. Now,
that's correct. Yeah, the official fan clubs for both.
Isn't that kind of a conflict of interest?
No. It's funny because a lot of people have said that very same thing, but not for me. I love them both. I mean, I originally loved Star Trek before there ever was a Star Wars. And then I love Star Wars after that. So I've loved them both equally, and they're both so different that I don't see them competing in any way.
And I agree with you, because I'm sure you're asked often, and I've been asked several times, which one do you like better? And that's very tough, because you're being asked, what do you like better, an apple or an orange?
Absolutely. Or you know, you're also being asked to, you know, you have two children. It's like, well, which child do you like the best? Well, I love them both the best. I don't have a favorite, you know, because there's the interesting aspects to Star Trek and there's the interesting aspects to Star Wars, and they're all equally good. So I see them as complementing each other. I don't see them as, well, you got to like one or the other.
That's right. You really don't. You can like each one for what it is. And there are a lot of people. Star Wars is more of your sci-fi fantasy. Mm-hmm. They pretty much can do whatever they want. Hyperspace, lightsabers, anything.
Yes. But
then you have Star Trek that's more grounded in what our future could be. So in a way, you have more of a... Star Trek isn't going to have lightsabers, because the odds of us ever developing something like that, well, we kind of do now, sort of, but Star Wars already has the marking on that.
What else I see, Jefferson, is that I think that Star Trek is definitely more hardcore science fiction, because it's giving us a view of what our future might be like. Mm-hmm. And exploring the universe and the science behind that, whereas Star Wars is really much more fantasy. You know, I mean, it's a swashbuckling, lightsaber dueling. You know, the bad guy in black and the good guy in white, and they're really, in that respect, see, I see them as being very different. Star Trek is pure science fiction, whereas Star Wars is really more science fantasy.
I think you're absolutely right in that, and that is a good way of looking at it. So what drew you to want to be so involved in Star Trek and Star Wars that you founded these fan groups and clubs like this?
Well, I loved Star Trek from the time I was a teenager, watching reruns on television. And when 1979 came around and the first Star Trek movie came out, I was just so excited about it that I thought, you know, I want to start a fan club and just do my own little newsletter around Star Trek, the motion picture. Well, I did do that in 79, and it was a Xerox newsletter, hand typed on the typewriter in my mom and dad's basement. And, over the years, the few years I started, I got a job at a print shop, and I started finding out how to make the newsletter look more professional and look better. And it just kind of started to grow to the point where it took on a whole life of its own. I started sending copies of it to Gene Roddenberry, and lo and behold, he loved it. And he would write me letters and telling me how much he enjoyed it. And I started becoming friends with him, and it just started really blooming. And at one point, it came into the hands of the licensing people at Paramount Studios, and they said, "Hey, you don't have a license to do this." And I said, "Well, I'm just a kid, you know, doing this out of my mom and dad's basement." You know, I said, I'm not really making any money off of this thing at this point. And they said,
"Note to viewers and watchers, CBS has been going after people as young as 18 years old."
Yep. There you go. And that's about what I was, actually. They said to me, "Well, you know what? You have the right amount of fanaticism mixed with the right amount of professionalism. And we've been thinking about doing something officially with a Star Trek fan club." And Gene Roddenberry piped in and said, "This is the guy I want to do it." So they invited me out to the studio, and I went out and I met with them. And we sat down and talked, worked out the deal. And lo and behold, a month later, I got a contract in the mail and became the official Star Trek fan club, and ran that for I don't know how many years it was until, well, let's see, that would have been 79. In about 1986, I got a call from George Lucas's company, Lucasfilm, and they said, "We've been seeing what you've been doing for Star Trek, and would love to talk to you about maybe taking over doing the Star Wars fan club for us." So I flew out to Skywalker Ranch, met with the head of licensing, and got to meet George and talk with him. And next thing I know, I got a contract and I'm doing the official Star Wars fan club as well. Although at that time, Star Wars hadn't come back yet, so they really wanted to call it the Lucasfilm fan club, which we did because there were other projects that they were doing besides Star Wars. And it just it blossomed incredibly. And by the time the first prequel of Star Wars came out, I had just a little over 100 people working for me, half of them doing Star Trek, half of them doing Star Wars. Our Star Trek Communicator magazine became much more high gloss, official. It became a real magazine. It was carried on the newsstands and sent out to all of our members who were subscribers. And we had 500,000 copies going out at one point every issue of the magazine. So it was an amazing, incredible time. And I owe everything to Star Trek, because had I not found Star Trek and it had not inspired me, I wouldn't have ever gotten into doing what I did. And right up to this day, Jefferson, I'm almost 62 years old. This is how I've made my living. I've been a consultant now, working in the genre with a lot of different licensees and other people who are working on products. And it literally dictated my career from the moment I watched my very first episode of Star Trek.
That's pretty amazing to get into it like that. And to be able to meet Gene Roddenberry and George Lucas, I don't think there are a lot of people that can claim that they had met both, which I think is pretty amazing. And I looked on Memory Alpha on your article there, and it happened to include a picture of Gene Roddenberry and George Lucas shaking hands. And I'm sure that was
me at the 10th anniversary Star Wars convention. That's when I first launched the Lucasfilm fan club, was at that convention put on by Starlog. And they surprised George on stage and had Gene Roddenberry come out. And it was the first time these two giants of the science fiction universe had ever met one another. And it was a moment in history, and I was there to witness this, as were, I don't know how many people they had attend that, but there was a lot of people there, and we all got to see this moment in history when the creator of Star Trek and the creator of Star Wars came together in one place.
That had to be pretty amazing.
It was amazing. I got chills, I have to admit, when Gene walked out on stage and I captured that one picture, printed it in the magazine, and because we were able to do both fan clubs, it was printed in the Star Trek Communicator magazine and was also in the Star Wars Insider magazine. So, that's a moment I'll never forget. And it's one I'm glad has been, captured for posterity so that people will see that this was the moment. And that was the moment when Gene walked down on stage, he stuck out his hand and George reached out and they shook hands. That was the moment when they first met.
Wow. That's a history making moment. And hasn't that been the only one, the first and only time that they've been seen on stage
only time they've ever been together in the same place. Yep. And now that Gene's gone, that can never happen again.
So. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right. Did you ever find, was there either one? We did already talk about how between Star Trek and Star Wars, it's hard to answer which one is better because it is like comparing apples and oranges. But was there either one that seemed to be easier or more difficult to work with or create content for?
Star Trek was harder to create content for because in the beginning, let me go back a bit on that, because when I first started the fan club, I was just doing stuff on the movie, but then we moved into the other movies, the Wrath of Khan and the Search for Spock and on and on. I was able to cover a lot of stuff and do a lot of writing around the movies during that time. And when Lucasfilm, I did theirs, this was in what a lot of people call the dark time, because there was no new Star Wars movies. There was no actual confirmation that George was ever going to get back to doing them. He had said he wants to, but nobody knew whether there'd be any more Star Wars movies or not. And
he only had three movies in the holiday special to feed off of.
That's it. That's all there was. And, during my first few years doing the fan club for George Lucas, there was Willow, which we covered all of that. There was Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, and we covered all of that. Every issue I tried to put something Star Wars in it. First issue, I had an interview with Mark Hamill. I did an interview with Anthony Daniels, C-3PO. And so that was able to be carried through until work was starting to begin on the prequels. But on Star Trek, I have such fond memories of, because coming home from school and watching the episodes in the afternoon, and I just loved everything about it. I loved the ships, I loved the phasers, I loved the crew and their colorful uniforms, and just everything about it. And then as these movies kept coming on, I don't know that there's ever been a time more exciting for me when that first Star Trek movie came out, Star Trek, the motion picture. And I was standing in line with thousands of fans here in Denver, Colorado, to get in and see the very first showing of the motion picture. It was snowing and cold as hell. But we didn't care. We were getting, because we were all in line outside, and we were going to get to see Star Trek, a brand new Star Trek, for the very first time. That was, we'd all been sitting there thinking, Star Trek Lives, when's Star Trek coming back? I don't know, but the fact that we were really going to get to see a whole new adventure with the crew, that was magical.
When you saw Star Wars for that first time, and then Star Trek, the motion picture, what were your thoughts and feelings then? Because it seemed like Star Wars really set the tone for science fiction movies. And of course it had its fantasy element. Everyone could picture being a Jedi, a Princess Leia, Chewbacca, everything like that. Then you have Star Trek, the motion picture was kind of more of they call it Star Trek, the motionless picture.
It was more slow moving. All right. Yes.
Yeah. So
yeah.
What was your, do you remember what your thoughts and feelings were there, that, okay, Star Wars is really going to overshadow Star Trek because we see what sci-fi fantasy looks like. And now that we saw what science fiction really can be, science fiction is kind of dull and boring.
Would you you know, it's interesting because, you know, obviously when Star Wars first came out, and I was probably about 14 years old, I guess, somewhere in that range, you know, there was no Star Trek movies at that point. So there was nothing to compare it to from a movie perspective. When Star Trek the Motion Picture came out, I actually really liked it. I mean, I was an apologist for it. I mean, a lot of people were saying, oh, my God, it's so slow and plotting, and it's not like Star Wars. And I would always have to defend it, you know, and say, but it's not supposed to be like Star Wars. And so it was not till, what, a year or two after that, that The Empire Strikes Back came out. And I can remember a cousin of mine, after seeing that, said, oh, my gosh, he says, that's what the Star Trek motion picture should have been like. And I was like, well, you know, they're two different things completely. But, you know, I mean, it hurt to hear the criticisms at the time of Star Trek, the motion picture, and how it didn't live up to what everybody thought a Star Trek movie should have been. And you know, for a while there was no assurance that there was going to be any more Star Trek movies after that. And you know, it's just, I loved Star Trek the Motion Picture. I mean, it inspired me to go on and start the fan club, which went on to other things. And I think it's a movie that over time has gained appreciation and respect. Not that it doesn't have its flaws. It does. It's slow in a lot of places. But I still have such fond nostalgic memories for it that I could sit down and watch it all over again. I could watch it at any time.
I think Star Trek the Motion Picture, honestly, is exactly what a Star Trek movie would be. And for all its flaws and, sure, pacing, once you get around to the director's edition, honestly, that is a great cut to watch because the pacing is a lot better. The story makes more sense. And I'm more of a guy that I need to understand where we're at, where are we going, kind of a step-by-step sort of process. And for the longest time, just the whole V'ger sequence, like, okay, how big is this cloud? Is there a ship in the middle of it? How big is it? Are they flying to the back of it, then over it, and in front of it? All those things, which I'm sure sounds like kind of nitpicking, but there's got to be, at least in my opinion, some understanding of that. Whereas you had Star Wars, like, okay, they're at a cantina, they need to rent a ship, they go here and go there and do that. The audience is really able to follow it. And that was one of the small criticisms I had about the motion picture, was it seemed to be a little harder to follow.
Yeah.
Until you got to 20 some years later, you get to the director's edition. And I think director's editions of anything make it suddenly a lot easier to understand. I can't tell you how many movies that, you know, Zack Snyder's cut of Justice League, the extended cut of Batman versus Superman, those things, the 4-hour cut of Watchmen, all of it makes sense when you don't have to cut so much out. And so it's kind of I think it was kind of an unfair advantage for a motion picture is that it was literally cut, finished, put in a canister, and walked to the theater to film, to show. It was like it was that fast that it had to happen.
It was that fast. You're right. You're absolutely right. And yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. And so when you have conditions like that, it's how can you really tell an accurate and inclusive story when you're put under conditions like that? And it's interesting that you mentioned after the motion picture, there was really no guarantee that there'd be another Star Trek. And that's why Star Trek II had such a slash budget. I mean, they had a low budget. It was do what you can with the scraps and leftovers, because this is Star Trek's last chance. And if Star Trek II hadn't been what it was, that would have been it. I think
we have Harv Bennett to thank for that, because Harv Bennett is the one who came in and really helped to make that movie what it was. And of course, you know, and then Nick Meyer directing, you know, those, the two magicians there to help get it all going. But Yeah, I mean, The Wrath of Khan, I think, quite frankly, it was the Star Trek movie everybody had hoped the motion picture would have been.
You know, I can see that. I can certainly see that. And sure, it would have been great, but would it have really been what it was if it was the first one?
Right. Yeah, yeah, I still think they each have their place in Star Trek history, and I have a fond, you know, really, I'll be honest and frank with you. I have a fond feeling for every one of the Star Trek films up until the latter Next Generation movies, which I really did not like.
First Contact?
Oh no, I love First Contact. Okay. I mean, I combine them all as Star Trek movies.
Sure.
But the latter ones, the last one or two of the Next Gen movies.
Yeah, Insurrection and Nemesis.
Yeah, those two just didn't do it for me. I truly would have a hard time sitting through and watching those ones again. Whereas, you know, in Star Trek Generations, I thought that was good, although I hated the idea of killing Captain Kirk. I really feel like they should have left that alone. They shouldn't have done that. They should have left. I feel strongly about these major sci-fi properties in Star Wars and Star Trek that we're talking about right now. You have these major characters. For instance, in Star Wars, you have Han Solo. In Star Trek, you have Captain Kirk. And they should never have killed these characters off because it's such a downer, such a shock to see these characters that are beloved that you've watched for years and then to watch them die. I've always thought, and I've felt this way from the beginning to now, and that is, if you want to kill these characters, just have them go off somewhere where you don't have to see them anymore, but then it's up to each individual how they want to decide how these characters die. You know, I mean, if you want to imagine that they flew into a black hole and were crushed, and you know, that's fine. If I want to imagine that they found a whole new galaxy and found a planet to live out the rest of their lives on, well, then I can believe that, you know. But I hate seeing these beloved characters, you know, and Kirk's was so uninspired in how he died. And I mean, and Han Solo got killed by his own son with a lightsaber. I mean, it really left a sour taste in my mouth with both of them. I just feel like, you know, you don't have to kill them. Just find a way to send them off. And then, you know, if Jefferson wants to believe they still are going on and doing their things out there, that's great. And if Dan wants to think that they died in some way, then that's great for me. But, you know, don't shove it down our throats that, you know, this is how they're gone and they die. It's just, it took away the magic of those characters for me to some extent.
I think you're right. I can agree with you on a lot of parts of that, is that especially with Kirk, his death was uninspiring. With Han Solo's, I think that had more of an impact because it was at the hands of his son, which it had more of a overall impact to the whole sequel trilogy than it did in Generations, where it didn't really impact anything. Sure, Kirk helped some kind of gas propulsion looking rocket somehow not go into a sun, which was into a star, which that part didn't make sense in any case. But you're right. I think there was more gained out of Han Solo's sacrifice than there would have been more gain from Kirk surviving. That's a thing. Whereas I think if Han Solo had survived, that wouldn't have gained as much as what happened. It's like you kind of swap the two. There's a whole lot more that could have happened with Kirk surviving. I think with Han Solo, that was tough because Harrison Ford had wanted his character killed off since Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, it's too bad that he wanted that. I mean, I'm assuming that, you know, that was part of the deal in getting him to come back, was that they'd kill off the character. I'm sad that he thought that needed to be done, if that is indeed what happened. But I just, that left a bad taste in my mouth, and it even makes it hard for me to watch some of the Star Wars before that. Now, and you see Han Solo and you love him. He's this scoundrel in this robe, but then you realize, oh yeah. And at the end he gets stabbed in the heart by his son with a lightsaber. It's just kind of like takes away the fun and the magic of the whole thing.
As a writer, as an editorialist, how would you have changed in your magazine for Star Trek and Star Wars? So you're writing about this, and what would you have changed on the Star Trek side with what happened with Kirk, and what would you have changed about the Star Wars side with Han Solo?
Well, I first off, I wouldn't have killed him. I mean, period. I mean, you know, if that Nexus Cloud thing in the Star Trek film, maybe it somehow takes Kirk, sweeps him off, and he goes into some sort of a, you know, universe of his own where he lives out the rest of his days in a sort of a heaven of his own making, you know.
Chopping wood and making eggs.
Absolutely. There you go. If that's how he wants to spend the rest of his life, then, you know, we can all just say, okay, well, that's how he ended it up. You know, that's what he wanted to do. With Han Solo, I would have liked to have seen the redemption of Kylo Ren. Excuse me. And then a reunion of Han Solo and Princess Leia, because the one things I thought in the story, and I realize we're on a Star Trek podcast, but as far as Star Wars goes, I think that J.J. Abrams and crew made some really significant mistakes. One, maybe the biggest, was that we never got to see the three of them together. We never got Han, Luke, and Leia back together again, where we saw all three of them. And with Carrie Fisher's passing, that ended. We'll never get that now. And, you know, that's what everybody wanted from a Star Wars fan perspective was, you know, let's see Han and Luke and Leia back together again. Wasn't to be. And I thought they missed a really big opportunity with that.
You think that would have been too much fan service?
No, I don't. I really don't. I think there's intelligent, creative ways they could have done that so that fans would have at least got to see for a while, you know, whether it's for 10 minutes on screen or an hour on screen, they would have got to see the old gang back together again, so to speak. And, you know, so that's my criticism of Star Wars. Star Trek, I have less criticism, especially of the original cast movies, because I thought each one of them kind of managed their own. Star Trek V was my least favorite, but the more I watch it, the more I think there are some really good moments in that. I mean, the whole camping scene with Spock, Kirk, and McCoy, and I don't know, you know, I have a lot, maybe it's just nostalgia, because the longer these movies, the longer time passes by them, the more I go back and look at them, I think, well, that wasn't so bad, you know? And I think in Star Wars, the prequels have been appreciated more now, and that people look back at them than the criticism they got initially. But in Star Trek, it's the same way. And, you know, I mean, the new Star Treks on Paramount Plus, I'm really not that much interested in them, other than the Picard season 3 was just absolutely mind-boggling. I, you know, if that had been made into a movie, that would have been an incredible Star Trek movie. And, but every episode of that third season, because I'll be honest, the first and second season was like, yeah, you know, I care less whether I see it or not. That third season, I mean, they caught me from the very first episode. And it was like every episode had like a cliffhanger ending that you just like, oh, my God, what's going to happen next week? I couldn't wait to watch it. And it's been so long for me that there was a Star Trek that made me feel that way since I was a kid. Then the third season of Picard, boy, it did perfect. It really got it down. And I was a huge fan of that third season of Picard. And
they nailed it.
They nailed it. And I hope that they get a shot at doing something more with that, because I think Terry Metalis and the rest of the gang there that was working on that third season really created some magic there in it. And this is coming from a bit of a sour Star Trek fan that hadn't really been into Discovery, just didn't do it for me. Strange New Worlds has. I love Strange New Worlds. I think Anson Mount as Captain Pike has been a brilliant casting. So I have to admit, I really do actually enjoy Strange New Worlds. But of all the new Star Trek shows, that's the only one that has really captured my imagination, along with the third season of Picard.
I think, and I'm the kind of fan that gives a lot of leeway to Star Trek, maybe even more so than most. It takes a lot more to get me to not like a Star Trek show than it may be for others. I didn't mind Picard season one and two. I was so excited that we had Picard back. And so I think that was big. And you're right. Season three, no brainer. It was just, they just nailed every single episode. When Discovery came out, it was the first Star Trek that we had had since Enterprise. And that was a good 7 or 8 years. I'd have to look up the math on that.
Around.
And right, Discovery, I think, missed the mark for a while, but it seemed like the second half of season one started to kind of like, let's retool this way. We were a little too off on one direction. Let's try to recover this. Spent that whole second season sort of let's be what we probably should have been to start. And Anson Mount coming in as Captain Pike really helped that. It really, I think, helped get the second season back on the train. And I've liked the third and fourth of Discovery. But the one, I'll have to tell you, if there's any new Star Trek that even me, someone who pretty much is okay with all of it, I've got some nitpicks here and there. Star Trek V, not my cup of tea. Insurrection is basically a 2-hour television movie that was put on the big screen.
Exactly.
It's Lower Decks. Lower Decks just, it doesn't, that's the one that doesn't quite do it for me.
No, me neither. I know fans who absolutely adore that. I really do. Absolutely love it. It's just not for me. But then, you know, I'm more of and I admit I'm a bit I'm a bit biased because I prefer more the live action more than the animation. You know, even back in the old day when the original Star Trek animated show came out, I watched it because it was Star Trek and there was nothing else new coming out, but it still didn't grab me like, you know, the original series did. I'm just more of a live action fan than an animation fan. And so that's where my bias lies. But I know people who absolutely adore Lower Decks.
And it's not an animation thing with me. It's just... There are points in it where it goes, I think, too far into being silly for the sake of being silly. And in my opinion, it turned into a reference show.
Yeah.
Where the main foundation of the show is making these references and callbacks to other Star Trek. It was cool the first, you know, season or two, but then it became what the whole show was. And I just felt like, You can't have the show be a reference show to other Star Trek. And there weren't a lot of times I felt like that it stood on its own as its own thing. And maybe I don't understand Rick and Morty. That's kind of the thing that a lot of people tell me.
I'm the same way as you, Jefferson. I feel the same way as you. And I think how you described it is very much the way I feel about it, too. Some of the humor I just didn't find very funny. And it just wasn't my cup of tea. I'm not saying that it doesn't deserve to exist because I know, as I've said, I have a lot of friends who absolutely love it and adore it. And that's great. You know, I think that's the beauty actually. There is a part of me that hates this new era that we live in with Star Trek and Star Wars with these streaming services, because now we have so much Star Trek and Star Wars. It's just like they keep throwing it at us and throwing it at. I mean, I don't even know how many different Star Wars TV shows they have now on Disney Plus. Same with Star Trek now. It has one show after another. And part of my criticism going in is that, well, you know, they're just giving you too much. And I mean, unless it's just all of it is just brilliant, like the third season of Picard, at some point, you know, it's just like having your favorite food. You know, if you eat your favorite meal of whatever food that is, but then they just say, oh, and here's another plate. Oh, and here's another plate. And here's at some point you're going to go, no, I've had enough. I can't eat anymore. And I feel like that's what they're doing with both Star Trek and Star Wars, that they're just they're putting it out too much of it. And more so with Star Wars, but even with the Star Trek films, I feel like part of the magic of these was that, you know, it was almost like 2-3 years in between each one. And so you had time to build up anticipation and excitement, and it made each one that came out like, you know, an event, you know, and it just, they just started going way too far with another movie after another movie and another TV show after another TV show. And just, it's just too much. I feel like they've taken away a bit of the specialness of both franchises by just creating too much stuff. There isn't that weight and anticipation and excitement for something, because it's just like, you know, you're just being fed constantly, you know, new Star Trek, new Star Wars. I'm not a fan of the way these franchises are now in this new era. I just feel like it's just too much.
Everyone has their streaming service and they have to load it with content. And I think that's part of the problem is you've got every Tom, Dick and Harry has their own streaming service for stuff and they have to load it with content. And I think you're right. That is where we're getting too much of it, because they feel like, well, we need to make this worthwhile to get the subscribers for it. And that's why there's 11 million Star Wars shows around there and all this Star Trek. Has there been any, whether it be Star Wars or Star Trek, any movies, shows in particular that you felt like for your magazines, for your fan clubs, I'm obligated to talk about this one or to cover this one? I don't really like it, don't really care for it, but it's a have to.
Not really. I mean, though, if there was one that I would have felt like I really had to cover, would have been Picard, because it's carrying on that classic beloved character from Next Generation. So I would have felt very much so that we would have done a full blown coverage on that. And then when the third season rolled around, it was like, holy mackerel, this is some of the best. I mean, in fact, I've talked with others and I said, you know, I think in some ways, Picard season 3 is maybe some of the best Star Trek I've ever seen. And I'm shocked that in this modern era of Star Trek, where we just have one thing after another, you know, one show and then another show, and they have how many episodes of each one of these, that I could still say in this modern era of Star Trek that they're created something that is maybe some of the best Star Trek ever done. And they did that on the third season of Picard. So what it shows me is it can be done. It just have to have the right people that can put it together. And they did that. They captured magic in a bottle on that third season of Picard. You know, the other thing I was going to say about having all this Star Trek, in my opinion, is just, and Star Wars too, just way too much. You know, it's just too much coming at you. On the other side of that, then, as you and I were talking about Lower Decks, and it wasn't our cup of tea, either one of us, but there are all these different ones, so that now, you know, you can kind of pick and choose. It's kind of like, well, you know, Lower Decks isn't our cup of tea, but then again, it is for these guys over here, and they can watch that and then love it and adore it and enjoy it. And, you know, whereas maybe, you know, Picard is more our cup of tea. And so by having all of these different kinds of Star Trek, you at least are giving fans a lot of different choices to say, okay, you don't like that one? Well, maybe you like this one, you know? So there's a up and a down to everything.
I want to pick your brain on a couple things. One is going to be these Star Wars prequels. The other one's going to be for Picard. And I'll start with Picard. We're talking about season 3 and how much we just thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been great. It's basically all but greenlit that there's going to be a Picard movie.
Yeah.
And I think I'm kind of conflicted about that. that third season was such a great season and send off. I'd rather them focus on this fan named Star Trek Legacy, which is just filled with possibilities. Than I am with doing a Picard movie, because it's like he's had the correct send off. It's good. Do we like that send off, or do we take it as, yes, it's a great send off, but that doesn't mean that we can't have a movie? Or is turning Star Trek into Star Trek as movies kind of the failing? Is just because you have a good series doesn't mean Star Trek works as a movie, as we had seen with Star Trek V, as we had seen with Insurrection and Nemesis, as we had seen with the new J.J. Abrams Trek, which started high and just steadily got low again. So we're talking about a Picard movie at the same time, another Star Trek prequel.
Yeah, I know. Just what was announced, a week ago?
Yeah.
That they're working on that, and Seth Graham Greene, whatever, who wrote Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, is writing the screenplay for it. I don't know. You know, I've heard a lot of fans when that came out. There was a lot of fans that were saying, why are we always having to go backwards? Why can't we go forwards? You know, like Star Trek is always wanting to go. All of these shows are always going back to show us how it all began and how this started. Why don't we just go forward and see what's happening in the future of Star Trek and what new things they're exploring and finding and new races they're meeting and such. And so, yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm open. I will have an open mind to everything that these two franchises produce. I will look at them and say, okay, give me something really good. And if they do, wow, knock my socks off, because that was the third season of Picard. You know, I know I keep coming back to that, but it really blew me away, because I watched the first and second season and I was not impressed. I mean, it was meh. You know, it wasn't anything that I could write home about. None of the episodes did I really want to watch again. And I remember when the third season started, I wasn't even planning on watching it. And I kept reading all these posts on social media, and my friends kept saying, you have got to see this. You've got to watch this. This is not like the first and second season. This is really incredible. And I'm like, yeah, right. You know, I mean, it took me, I think, several weeks while the show was on before I finally decided, okay, I'll watch the first episode and give it a shot. And man, I was that first episode, man, I was caught right there. And I was like, man, I cannot wait. And so I immediately watched the second episode, which had already aired, you know, because I hadn't watched it. And then I was like, oh my God, now I got to wait a whole week to watch the third episode. And I mean, every episode, it was like that. It was like, I cannot wait to see what happens next week. That's not happened to me with Star Trek since the Next Generation days.
You're right. Star Trek The Next Generation, it really introduced something that I felt really worked for Star Trek. Not only worked, but was very torturous. I can't tell you how long the summer of 91 was after Best of Both Worlds Part 1. We hadn't seen a cliffhanger like that. You have your main character captured by an antagonist with his first officer's last order to fire on the ship to destroy it, and in a cliffhanger. I think there are certain points where, was that the summer of 99, 91? 87 was first season, 88 was, I want to say it was summer of 90, 91. My memory is going. But it was torturous, that 3 months, just to see what's going to happen. How's this going to resolve? And I think that really set the stage for doing things like that, for having these cliffhangers, and for Star Trek to do that for every episode is amazing. I think that's the way to go, because you have people chomping at the bit to see what happens next.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing about Picard season 3 was that not only did they have great writers and the directors and everybody that put it together, the showrunner, Terry Metalis and such, but the acting, the performances of the Next Generation crew was just, you know, the dialogue between Beverly Crusher and Picard and about their son Jack, and the you know, Jonathan Frakes Riker was just He was brilliant in that third season. I mean, it's just Worf was incredibly cool. I loved the take on him, you know, and I felt like, you know, and Geordi and his daughters, and I just, the whole thing just, and Data was great. I loved how they brought Data back in the show. And I just thought, you know, boy, they did it right. I mean, not only did they make the characters interesting in the way they are now, but the acting was just superb. And I don't have enough accolades for that last third season. The best thing I can say about it is really, I think that they produced some of the very best Star Trek that's ever been made. And with all the hours of Star Trek that have been made since that first pilot way back in the 60s, to say that is high honor, and I think it deserves it. It really does. They've made some of the best Star Trek I've ever seen.
For anyone in the audience screaming about Big J, you got to remember when Best of Both Worlds came out. It was the summer of 1990. Okay, you have to forgive me for that, which I think everyone knows. Everybody knows where they were when JFK was assassinated, when the Challenger exploded, and when Best of Both Worlds Part 1 aired. It's one of those things.
I remember exactly that moment when Riker says, fire. I mean, I remember I was exactly where I was, what I was doing, and everybody was in the room with me going, oh, my God. I do. It's interesting you say that, because I remember exactly where I was in that moment when I watched that for the first time.
Well, it was set up that way because it was kind of questionable that Patrick Stewart would even return to Star Trek.
Right.
So they wrote a setup where if he did not come back, then they had a way to continue through. And we're talking about prequels and going back instead of going forward. And Star Wars did the same thing. I think that there are a lot of pitfalls that you can have with going backwards, because you've got this canon, you have these events that you, in a way, have to abide by that did not happen when you're telling that previous story. Star Trek is guilty of it. Star Wars is guilty of it. And when it comes to the prequels, and then the reason I asked about was there anything that was felt like more of an obligation that you had to put in any of your magazines or clubs, and you were talking about the Star Wars prequels. If I had to sit down and watch those right now, I couldn't get through Phantom Menace.
I know. There's some moments in it that are just so hard to get through. And
it's so, like,
even today, even though there's less harsh criticism of it, it still is hard to watch. And for me, I just have a hard time watching. I just didn't think Anakin Skywalker, the little boy that was in that, was I didn't think he was very convincing. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. And I just didn't. I don't know.
Do you think Jake Lloyd as an actor for that role just didn't hit it?
Yeah, okay. I think that there could have been a better one for it. And I hate to say that, because I've met him. He's a nice kid and he's a nice, you know, young man now. I really feel like, he didn't hit the mark. And I don't know. I wouldn't have necessarily started off with Anakin at that age. I would have started off with him as more like the Anakin that was in the Clone Wars. Or not the Clone Wars. I mean, the Attack of the Clones. Mm-hmm. I would have started him out as a teenager at the very least, not as a little boy. It's just, I don't know. But who am I to question George Lucas? He's the genius behind it all. It was what he wanted to do, and he did it. So
you're right. I think that we would have probably accepted it a little more if we didn't have Anakin as a little kid. And yeah. I get the decision behind that is we want to show you this little kid that you know how he's going to turn out, and that's going to add more drama to it. Like, oh, it's a shame that this kid in about 10 years, what he's going to become. But I do think I agree with you that if we had maybe gone with early teens, we could have accomplished the same thing.
And you know, I think it would have been more interesting than to start it out with him being so young. And then it was almost kind of awkward when he meets Padme for the first time, and she's already like a teenager and he's a little boy, and you're thinking, okay, wait a minute. Now they're getting together, and I'm like, okay, that's a little weird, but whatever, you know.
Well, so. when you're 9 and 13, it's a world different. But then once you get to where you're about 21 and 25, okay, it starts to even out.
Yeah, it doesn't matter then, but you know, yeah, it just you know, and I remember at Padme saying, "You're a funny little boy, Anakin," you know, and I'm thinking, yeah, well, he's a funny little boy. He's also going to be your husband one day.
Right. Well, it's not as bad as having Luke and Leia kiss and then decide later, they're going to be brother and sister.
Oh, they're going to be brother and sister now. You know? Yeah, you know, there's all kinds of little things that you can pull out of every one of these franchises and say, oh, that was a bit weird, or that didn't work, or whatever. But obviously there's more about each of them that has survived the test of time and has created such a love that they don't end. They just keep going and going and going. I know of no other really franchise that can make that, you know, other than the Disney brand itself. But I don't know of any other franchise that can talk about it. Maybe James Bond, but even James Bond doesn't have the following that Star Trek and Star Wars has. So they are both unique in their own right. They have survived for so long, and they continue to survive and flourish, that I don't know. They're truly special, both of them.
If you could pick where you wanted to, because we certainly have a criticism about prequels. They're difficult. I think you can really paint yourself in the corner. And that's kind of why Discovery just said, all right, screw it. We're going to the 32nd century. See how you guys like that. Right. Where we can go and do whatever the hell we want. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, what do you feel is your draw to going to the past like this, and how would you move forward? How would you move forward with Star Trek and Star Wars?
Well, I think, you know, obviously the draw of going to the past is to fill in the gaps of how these beloved characters that we've watched and cared about for so many years, how they became who they are, how Starfleet became Starfleet, you know, how the Jedi became the Jedi and all of that. So that's where the magic comes in of going in the past. But, you know, I don't really know about going into the future. I mean, you know, I leave that up to people who have much more creative minds than me, and let them figure out how we go forward as opposed to going backwards. So I'm not really sure what I would do to go forward, but just to create another starship with a fascinating crew, and make it all new, you know, and not doing retreads of characters we've seen already. I mean, I really feel like Picard season 3 was the perfect way to end it all. And we gave them a great send-off. So, you know, you make a movie with them, and even though the concept might sound great, you know, it might not be so good. And then it kind of takes away from the luster of that final season of Picard where, you know, that's the perfect ending. Sometimes I think, you know, that's where these studios go too far. It's kind of like, okay, you know, I realize there's more money to be made. There's more, you know, things to do with it. But sometimes maybe it's best to just let it end there and start on something completely new. And just say, you know, we had a great run. That was an amazing ending for it all. And let's just leave it right there, you know?
I think just because it's good doesn't mean you need to keep doing it.
It's absolutely right, because then you start to make mediocre, you know, episodes and shows, and then it takes away from the magic of the original one, you know. So I say, I think sometimes it's good to have an end to something, not just keep it going and keep it going and keep it going, you know, like the Energizer Bunny. It's like sometimes it's good to just say, put a period at the end of the story and say the end.
I think that you're right, and that is something that either franchise really has been bad about.
Oh,
is just ending it. You can be good right here. that keep hitting that cash cow because it's about making the money. And so they're going to keep turning these things out. Now, I'm happy for these shows we got. I'm happy for Strange New Worlds. I'm happy for The Mandalorian. I think there are definitely ones that they pull out that really work. Mm-hmm. It's just that you're leaving yourself open to this overdoing where you put out something that you're doing it because you think that everyone's going to watch it just because it says Star Wars or Star Trek. I'll give you the perfect example. The Star Wars series Andor, I couldn't really follow it. It felt like, why am I watching this? I'm being taken advantage of. I'm watching it because they know that if it says Star Wars, I'm probably going to watch it. Same with Lower Decks. Like, Big J, we know you don't like Lower Decks, but you're a sucker. You're going to watch it anyway because it's Star Trek and because you're a podcaster and you need to be in the know on all of it. Well, yeah, you're right. They've got me. It's the same thing. I don't know how much you've been following Marvel, but Marvel has been doing the same thing ever since Endgame ended.
They're hurting now. People are getting burned out on it.
They have, I think, I want to say outwardly, knowingly showed that they believe that we will watch anything that says Marvel. So they're putting out all of this stuff and they know, hey, they're going to watch it because it says Marvel. But as a whole, everything from Endgame up to now, there have been a couple things that were good. I liked WandaVision. I don't mind What If. I thought that She-Hulk was, it was okay. But for every one of those, there's this new series, Echo. I do not like it. Do not like it one bit. I thought The Falcon and The Winter Soldier was good. They have some good ones, but you can tell. You can tell that they have this feeling that we know you're going to watch it just because it says Marvel. And I think that is the same thing that Star Trek and Star Wars is doing now, is that they make us feel like we're suckers, that we're going to watch it no matter what.
You know, you were mentioning, and I apologize. I'm on my phone, and my battery is just about to die.
Oh, that's so good. We can wrap up here.
Wrap it up here. But we're talking about the show Andor, and the director of that, or the creator of Andor, is now going to be directing the showrunner for the new Star Trek movie we're just talking about that got announced a week ago. So there is a connection crossover between Andor and the next Star Trek movie. So, if I go black on you, I apologize. I'm not, because I'm being rude. It's just my battery is about to die on me.
Daniel, thank you very much for spending the time with me. It was great to talk to you and talk about Star Trek and Star Wars and just go back and forth on that. Real quick, before your battery dies, we have the time. Where can our fans and listeners and viewers follow you or find you on social media?
They can find me on Facebook at Dan Mattson. They can just look me up there. Twitter, I'm under The Dan Mattson, and on Instagram, I'm Mattson8973, and I'm posting all kinds of things constantly about things from the past of all of these franchises and things that I worked on with them and such. So there's a lot of interesting things that I share with people.
Thank you, Daniel. Appreciate it. And to everyone that's listening and watching, live long and prosper.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can support us at patreon.com/beyondtrek.
We are Beyond Trek Podcast. Lower your inhibitions and surrender your years. We will add inspirational and hilarious Trek content to your day. Your attention will adapt to subscribe to us. Resistance is futile.